You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Today's episode is brought to you by Harry's. Get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, five-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover by going to harrys.com/evidence right now. That's harrys.com/evidence. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. Warning. If you believe in Santa Claus, this episode contains information that can make you question his existence. Listener discretion is advised.
Dear Santa Claus, will you please send me a box of paints, also a 9-cent reader, and a school bag to put them in? And if you have any nuts or candy or toys to spare, would you kindly send me some? And will you please a 7-year-old boy, Homer Mellon?
Dear Santa Claus, please send me a box of licorice candy, a desk for my room, a bill, a tool chest, a rug for my room, a fountain pen, Esther like James's, a plow for my garden, some live plants, some vegetable seeds, some games, some books, an ink eraser, a bottle of peroxide, a hatchet that is sharp, a box of crayons, some candy for Duke, and some more blankets for Daisy. With love, Elise Epps. P.S. Daisy is the name of my kitten.
Dear Santa Claus, I'm very glad that you're coming around tonight. My little brother would like you to bring him a wagon wheel. I know you cannot afford it, so I will ask you to bring him whatever you think best. Please bring me something nice, what you think best. Wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. From your loving friend, Mary. P.S. Do not forget the poor.
Writing letters to Santa has been a part of season celebrations for many years. These are actual letters written by kids in the early 1900s. Many of these letters were addressed to Santa Claus with no address. Sometimes there were made-up addresses like 1 Snowflake Lane, North Pole, 1225. Letters were sent using mainstream mailboxes and post office workers were inundated with colorful envelopes. Sadly, because the addresses did not exist, letters to Santa ended up at the dead letter office. Once postal workers determined that a letter could definitely not be delivered, it was destroyed. It was very sad that these wishes went to dust, and that is where one man saw an opportunity, a man who became known as the Santa Claus Man. Today's episode is brought to you by Harry's. And before we knew it, Christmas is here. If you're anything like me, you've left everything to the last minute. Again. If you're stuck for a last minute gift, I can recommend Harry's. I've been curious about Harry's for a while. The story of two college friends, Jeff and Andy, who decided to create high quality men's grooming products that is affordable is something I thought that I could get behind. And I honestly haven't been disappointed. So they've actually bought a factory in Germany where they have an expert team who brings you the best quality precision blades. A quick browse on their website and you'll see the great variety of products Harry's has to offer. Shave gel and cream, face wash, shower gel, shampoo and conditioner, and of course, their slickly designed razors. You can also choose the color of your specially crafted razor handle. Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for only £3.95. Support our podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including a weighted ergonomic razor handle, five precision engineered blades cartridge, foaming shave gel and travel blade cover, by going to harrys.com/evidence right now. That's harrys.com/evidence. Christmas has not always been as big a deal as it is today. It was only declared a holiday in 1870, and many people disregarded it, still going to work and seeing it as any other day. In the late 19th century, correspondence with Santa looked quite different to what it is today. In fact, it was the complete reverse. Parents used the myth of Santa as an opportunity to encourage good behavior, or to impart life lessons to their children. Parents wrote to their kids pretending to be Santa, imploring them to be good. Kids would reply, expressing what it is that they wished for. Some would confide in Santa, telling him their biggest secrets. There were also questions, so many questions. This famous letter is from a girl named Virginia. She had been pestering her father, a coroner from the Upper West Side, with questions he did not know how to answer. He suggested she wrote a letter to the newspaper, The Sun, and maybe they could answer. Virginia's letter was short and sweet, and once published, won over many hearts. It read, "Dear Editor, I'm 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the sun, it is so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia O'Hanlon, 115 West 95th Street." The editor did not take his reply lightly, and he knew how many children wondered about the same thing. His thoughtful reply was as followed. "Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe, except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant, in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there was no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance, to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus. You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus, but even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof that they aren't there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in the world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside. But there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man nor even the unified strength of all the strongest men that ever lived could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. It is all real. Ah, Virginia, in all this world there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus. Thank God, he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood." As the early winter air chilled the streets of New York in 1912, one beacon of hope brought joy to all residents. The 60-foot-tall tree in Madison Square Park was lit up with 2,300 colored electric bulbs, and it was an awesome sight. Everyone, regardless of religion or cultural background, shared in the joy it brought. A newspaper article of the time reported, "Above the bustle and tear of a city's life in a busy square, the Christmas tree stands with its open hands a symbol of love for all to share. And great and small respond to the call of the chimes of the belfry, till one and all forsake the shop and the gilded home, for the voice of the Christ child calling. Come, oh, come, my festival is free. And love is the host at my Christmas tree. They gather, the rich, the poor, or one parent and child and stranger lone. For the heart of the city goes out tonight in a chorus of music, a flood of light. And the Christ child spirit, divinely fair, that illuminated the manger, cold and bare, is born again in the city square. Gift-giving was an element that arose from industrialization. Gifts were never elaborate and expensive, but rather practical. Toys were a treat. Sometimes kids were given toy trains, teddy bears, or rag dolls. Homemade presents like cookies and clothing were also popular. Department store Macy's saw a money spinner in Christmas and made the most of Advent time to sell presents. The store decorations and window displays drew crowds from far and wide. Many Jewish people and many migrants never celebrated Christmas. But because decorations were on the streets, it became a joint celebration, and so the magic of Christmas as a communal celebration was born. No one could escape the Christmas spirit, no matter if you celebrated it or not. The 1910s were also a booming time for newspaper advertising. Literacy was on the rise, and more newspaper publications saw the light. With more newspapers came more advertising. Readers learned about new products, possible presents, and how happy it made the recipients. Editorial specials showed how the royals and other significant people celebrated Christmas. Celebrating Christmas became the thing to do. Kids also became excited about the frenzy with which Christmas was embraced, and lists to Santa became longer and longer. However, not all wishes were elaborate. Letters reached the dead letter office, and postal workers felt too bad to destroy it. They ended up doing what most people did with controversial letters at the time. They sent them to newspapers. Newspapers published the letters, hoping someone somewhere would step up and grant the children's wishes. Letters were not asking for expensive toys, but for basic needs like food or soap. Occasionally, people responded and sent gifts out. But the whole thing wasn't well organized. There was no one to oversee correspondence, so most of the time, nothing much happened. There was no vetting process, so anyone could write, pretending to be kids, just so they could get something for nothing. Charity organizations pointed out that they were already in place to help the needy, and if resources were being handed out, it should go to them. For the most part, people read the letters with great interest. They discussed it with sadness, but no one did anything about it. In the end, the post office stopped forwarding the letters to newspapers. This caused an outrage, seeing as readers loved reading the letters. Publishing these kids' letters to Santa Claus was selling more newspapers, so editors were keen to put some kind of system in place. It was an opportunity for someone with charitable instincts and organizational skills. Someone had to come to the rescue. The answer came from a man by the name of John Duval Gluck. Some might say he was destined to save Christmas, seeing as he was born on December 25th. He came from a big family. He was the oldest of five brothers and grew up in New Jersey. Christmas was always a big deal in his family. In 1913, John was a customs agent who was down on his luck. His wife had left him, and he was living in the back room of his friend's restaurant. He always had a side hustle going on. He had product ideas, business ideas. He worked as a promoter for bullfights at the Coney Island Mardi Gras. With all his promoting and hustling deals, he had built up quite a number of high-profile contacts. When he became aware of the letters to Santa problem, he saw golden opportunity. John founded the Santa Claus Association, a clearinghouse for all the letters. The post office would have a place to send the letters to, and he would serve as a matchmaker of sorts. With a long list of contacts, he was able to write letters to some of New York's wealthiest families, like the Pulitzers and the Vanderbilts. He was an eloquent writer, a great promoter, and knew how to sell an idea. In these letters, he explained what the Santa Claus Association did, and most of them gladly agreed to receive letters and send presents to children. When John pitched his idea to the post office, they too were happy with the idea, as this provided them with a solution to their problem. All letters addressed to Santa were henceforth sent to John Gluck and his Santa Claus Association. Next door to his lodgings was an empty office, also owned by his restaurateur friend. The friend agreed that John could use the office rent-free, as it was for a good cause. The Santa Claus Association was a not-for-profit organization. Because it was not classified as a charity as such, John did not have to worry about charity watchdogs.
There were no rules to abide by, and John couldn't run the association any way he saw fit. Volunteers helped him to sort through all the mail. They had a system of sifting through the thousands of letters they received from little children. They first had to confirm that the letters were indeed legitimate letters from children addressed to Santa Claus. Actual people also had the surname Claus, so if a letter was addressed to S. Claus, the volunteers had to check if the address was real or not before they opened someone else's mail by mistake, as that would have amounted to a federal crime which carried serious penalties. In their first season, the association answered an unbelievable 17,000 letters. The more successful they were, the more volunteers came forward and offered to donate time. Donations also came in the form of cash, which was to pay for stamps and stationery, to reply to the children's letters. John was a genius when it came to handling the media. Journalists were invited to the workshop to show and inform people what they were doing. He copied the Red Cross's idea of issuing a commemorative stamp. An artist donated a painting, and a stamp was made of it for the Santa Claus Association. The Red Cross took legal action against John for copying their idea, but they did not get too far with it. Once the stamps had been made, the original painting on which the stamp was based remained at the location where letters were answered. Then one day, it disappeared. Someone had stolen it. That was an unthinkable greedy thing to do, and no one knew who could have taken it. Everyone who had access to the place were charitable people who volunteered their time out of the goodness of their hearts. Before long, the painting was returned with a note, apologizing for taking it. This story was juicy, and it made it into the papers. Who stole from Santa's secretaries? Many people suspected that it had been a publicity stunt, and that Gluck was behind it all. He was always looking for new angles to keep his association in the news headlines. As time went on, people became more and more trusting of the Santa Claus Association. They did not go through the trouble of sending gifts directly to the children. They preferred sending gifts to the association to forward it. In certain cases, they sent money so that the association could buy gifts. They were running short of hands to deliver the gifts. As such, the United States Boy Scouts, not to be confused with the Boy Scouts of America, volunteered and offered their boys to deliver presents for the Santa Claus Association. They needed good press to repair their public image, as two of their scouts had recently landed in an argument, with the one shooting the other, killing him. The Santa Claus Association increasingly needed money for things like stamps. Gluck asked people for money, something he was very comfortable doing. But he was also claiming that he needed money for items which were already being donated to the association, like rent and stationery. People became suspicious of Gluck. Charity watchdogs expressed their concerns that Gluck was only lining his own pockets. But Gluck was never someone to shy away from confrontation. He did what he did best, and contacted the media. In his mind, he was untouchable, because he was not a charity and was flying under the radar. He didn't believe he had to comply with any rules. The United States Boy Scouts asked him to help them with their fundraising. This was something Gluck was very good at. People later realized that there was a conflict of interest. Gluck was helping them raise funds and was taking a handsome commission for his trouble. But he was making use of free labor from the scouts. People later frowned at this and wondered if Gluck was maybe doing it all for personal gain, rather than out of the goodness of his heart. Gluck rebutted and was quick to point out that his nice guy serviced a poor children persona. People soon left Gluck alone. Gluck at one stage circulated a rumor that he worked for the Secret Service. He recruited people to work with him, ordinary members of the community, but they could only join his citizenry Secret Service after paying a fee, of course. These recruits were trained to be vigilant, looking for spies or possible enemies of the state. But this was no patriotic service. It was just yet another way for Gluck to find charitable people and add them to his mailing list. The actual Secret Service learned about this and immediately put a stop to it. In around 1916, the third Christmas, Gluck had become disinterested in the Santa Claus Association altogether and stepped down. He was still involved, but one of the volunteers was appointed as the new lead. At one stage, Gluck even commissioned famous architects to create, as he put it, the most unique building in America. It was to be made of marble with grand murals, but never went ahead. There would be a massive Christmas tree in front of the building at all times, and the building would contain a real-life Santa's workshop. Unfortunately, his grand plans were never approved by the city. Bert S. Kohler, the commissioner of welfare in New York City, felt uneasy about Gluck and his association. Kohler did not celebrate Christmas, so he was immune to Gluck's sentimental letters, aimed to pull at his heartstrings. Some people even called Kohler Scrooge, because he was unaffected by the joy and magic of the season. Kohler was also unaffected by criticism, and became determined to take Gluck down. He sent an auditor to look at Gluck's operations, as he was convinced donations made their way into his personal accounts. At that point, the association had 5 volunteers, and they were working out of a hotel room. Gluck used the media again, releasing his bookkeeping to newspapers. The sugar-coated version of his affairs made Gluck look like a saint. Gluck vehemently denied all allegations of fraud and said, "The best I can do is charge the whole affair off to gossip founded on rumor." Kohler realized he was not going to win against Gluck, so instead, he decided to shut the smooth-talking hustler down at the source. Kohler went to the post office and revealed the results of his audit, that Gluck was in fact embezzling funds intended to purchase gifts or to pay for postage and logistics. Where the money went was anyone's guess. The United States Post Office ended their association with Gluck and eventually rerouted all letters to Santa to their own service, Operation Santa Claus. Gluck was never charged with fraud. He left New York and moved to Florida, where he lived out his days. He was considered to be the one who once saved Christmas, but in the process, saved himself a little bit more. The thing about John, he saw how easy it was to extract money and goodwill from people if you had the right motivation. Perhaps we should give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he started with an honest, charitable idea. But being that big talker, and ever the hustler, eager to get more money, he became his own undoing in the end.
We'd like to thank today's sponsors, Harry's. Get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover, by going to harrys.com/evidence right now. That's harrys.com/evidence.
If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/evidencelockerpodcast to see more about today's case. If you like our podcast, please subscribe in Apple Podcast or wherever you're listening right now.
And from us here at Evidence Locker, to all of our listeners, happy holidays. We hope you have a special time with family and friends.
This was the Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're away. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
You better watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake.
Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Little tin horns and little toy drums, Rudy toot toots and rummy tum tums.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
And curly head dolls that toddle and coo, elephant boats and kitty cars too.
Santa Claus is coming to town. The kids in girl and boy land will have a jubilee.
They're
they're gonna build a toyland town all around the Christmas tree. So you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming, Santa Claus is coming, Santa Claus is coming to town.
If the Candyman can, then the Santa Claus man. It was to be made of marble with grand murals.
Mario.
With grand weddings.
Mm-hmm. It would celebrate Santa in all his glory.
It would celebrate Santa in all of his glory. He became his own undoing. In the end. Just, sorry, can't sing Linkin Park. Okay.